Okay, this week we have two parshiot again, Bahar and Bechukotai. Next year we have almost no double parshiot, right? Because it's Shemitah, so they have to spread it out. Add a Shana Muberet. No, I was thinking about Shemitah for a different reason, because they keep bothering me in the office what I'm going to teach next year. So I thought if it's Shemitah, then I should take a sabbatical. I figured that would, right? More neurotic. Okay. So today's topic is really my Inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. So you can get ready for the Shemitah, but we won't spend that much time with it. Source number one. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe b'har Sinai lemor. Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem ki tavo el ha'aretz asher ani noten lachem v'shav ta'aretz shabbat lashem. And God spoke to Moshe on Har Sinai, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come to the land which I'm going to give you, the land should rest and should have a Sabbath to God. Sheishanim tizra sadecha, sheishanim tizmor karmecha, v'asafta et tvuata, uvishana hashvi'it shabbat shabbaton yel aretz shabbat lahashem, sadecha lo tizra v'karmecha lo tizmor." Now, the famous question that Rashi asks, which is in source 4, Ma inyan shmita eitzel har Sinai, I'm not really convinced that the question is really a strong question. I mean, the truth is, in terms of the structure of Sefer Vayikra, we are moving towards the end of Vayikra. The end of Vayikra tells us, and these are the things that God said to Moshe at Sinai, and you'll see verses like that a couple of times, which really we're getting towards a conclusion. The question would be, why is this singled out? And I guess on a year like this, when Bahar and Bechukotai are together, one of the things that you'll see is that when it talks about the Galut, it's when you go into Galut in terms of the Tochacha, it says, and then the land will be able to rest. And Chazal understand from this, there are many verses in Navi as well, that this is one of the things that the Jews didn't do, and this was one of the reasons that they were punished, that Galut would take place. And therefore, that this could very well be an introduction to the Tochacha, and as simply as we're winding down in order to end the book, but it's more than ending the book. I mean, realize that there are two major Tochachot in the Torah. One Tochacha is at the end of Vayikra, the other Tochacha is towards the end of Dvarim. Both of them are there in the place where they are for the same reason. That these are the two junctures that Am Yisrael is supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael. Which means after they leave Har Sinai and everything is finished, what's supposed to take place? They're supposed to go into Eretz Yisrael. What happens at the end of Dvarim? They go into Eretz Yisrael. In both cases, when they're supposed to go in, we have a long section. Okay, pause now. Before you go in, I want you to know what you need to do to lose it. Right? This is how you lose Eretz Yisrael. And as I said, the two Tochachot are there really for the same thing. So it shouldn't be such a surprise now that as we're moving away from Har Sinai, then we have this discussion. Listen, Shemitah is an important thing. Shabbat is an important thing. We would have a difficulty saying this mitzvah is more important than this mitzvah. But apparently, Shemitah is something which is national, something which is global, it's something which is b'far hesya, it's public, and it's something which we're told that it's one of the reasons that the Galut takes place. A good question, and I don't have a good answer. And one of the things is we actually find, not exactly on this point, but on a parallel point, which I don't want to go into right now, we find that the Rambam and his teachers had a different idea when Shemitah was. In fact, there are some Kabbalists who said Shemitah 2 years ago, not next year. So there, even by Shemitah, there is a machloket, it's exactly when it is. So
you're...
Shabbat is from 6 days of creation.
So the Jews were keeping count when
they were... Even though the Jews were wandering the desert, and even though there's a law that if you wander in the desert, you don't know when Shabbat is, you count 6 days, then you start. But over here, they started as far as what God says, this is the proper day. And by the way, this is probably the background of some of the midrashim that talk about that Shabbat was given, that the Torah was given on the Shabbat, and it may be connected as well. To say, okay, now you know when to start. Over here, again, I don't want to take away the question completely, because what Rashi is bothered with is why it says Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Behar Sinai. It could have just said over here Vayedaber Hashem Moshe. And that's really what Rashi's saying. And you know what? Before we read the Rashi, let's look at source 5, which is Rashi's source. It's the Sifra, Torat Kohanim, the Midrash Halacha. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Behar Sinai Lemor Ma Inyan Shmita Eitzel Har Sinai. So really what the question means over here, it's not that they're totally not connected. It wants to know why now, in terms of all the other mitzvot that were mentioned, at least in Sefer Vayikra, maybe more than that, maybe all the way back into Shemot, why by this mitzvah does it stress and does it say that God said to Moshe, Behar Sinai? Why Behar Sinai? I just now gave you an answer for that. Because they're about to leave Har Sinai. This is the end of the revelation, if you will, or the extended revelation. The Midrash continues and it says, "V'halo kol hamitzvot nemru misinai, ela mashmita nemru klaloteha v'diktuteha misinai, av kulum nemru klalotehem v'diktutehem misinai." That just like we find regarding Shemitah, that it was said in terms of its generalities and its specifics at Sinai, so too all of them were taught in the same way. Now, this is part of a larger discussion and possibly a larger argument. What exactly was the nature of the way that Torah was revealed and Torah was taught? How specific were things when they were taught to Am Yisrael? How specific were things when they were taught to Moshe? And at which particular junctures were things revealed and were things taught? Most likely the background over here is really to do a comparison between the way that Shemitah is taught in source number 3 in Shemot versus in Vayikra. But before we go back there, I want to look at Rashi, what Rashi does with this. Back and forth. Ma'anyan Shemitah Har Sinai. Again, we read the whole first part, which is underlined. Then Rashi continues and he writes, Venerally. So till now he quoted the Sifra, and now he comments on it. Venerally, Shekach Pirusha. Lefi Shaloma Tzinu Shemitat Karkaot Shenishnit Ba'arvot Moav in Mishneh Torah. Lamadnu shal klaloteh prototeh kula nemru misinai. Uba katuv lamad kan al kol dibur shenidaber l'moshe shem misinai hayu kulam klaloteim v'diktoteim v'chazru v'nashnu v'arvot moav. See, Rashi here is entering into that larger question of things of being said in the plains of Moab. The plains of Moab means the 40th year. When exactly are things being taught? Are they taught at Sinai, taught by the plains of Moab? So over here he's saying is that, well, if you pay attention over here, Shemitah is being taught over here with a great deal of detail, more detail than we find in Sefer Devarim. Now, generally, we find Sefer Devarim adds lots of details to Halachot that we hadn't seen before. So Rashi's telling us, well, since Shemitah is more detailed here, I can therefore assume that just like Shemitah is more detailed, just like Shemitah is more detailed, all the mitzvot were taught with detail. That's what Rashi is telling us.
Is this the discussion of whether the oral Torah is given at the same time as the written?
It could be that discussion if we choose to go into that discussion, which we don't think that we will. But it's connected. It's certainly connected.
So Shemitah is the example of...
It's the archetype.
Prototype. Okay.
Why?
Shemitah?
But why Shemitah? So again, I can come and say that the reason for Shemitah is because it's something which is national, and it's something which we're told in B'chukotai that if you don't keep Shemitah, you're going to go into Galut. Right? And then the land will be able to rest. Still, why Shemitah? Okay. Accepted. Now, there may be, again, Rashi told you, this is how I understand the Sifra. That doesn't mean that that's the only way to understand this particular Sifra. There may be another issue which the Sifra is dealing with, and that's what I said. If you compare Shemitah discussed in Shemot with Shemitah discussed in Vayikra. In Shemot, in Parshat Mishpatim, and now again, let's remember where and when Parshat Mishpatim come in. Now the truth is, we don't have a clue. Because this is one of these problems that we have. We end Yitro, and then we have Ve'ela Mishpatim. Yitro ends with Aseret HaDibrot, and that's short narrative after the Seret HaDibrot, all the people pulled away, and then a couple more mitzvot, and then Ve'ela Mishpatim. And the way that it sounds is, okay, is this follows. Here's the Seret HaDibrot, and now here's all of the details from that. So what you have is the Seret HaDibrot, and to a certain extent, and we've discussed this before, Mishpatim looks like an extension of the Seret HaDibrot. So therefore, the Seret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments in a sense, are the generalities, and the details are then found in Mishpatim. And I can then say, for example, one of the Seret HaDibrot is to keep Shabbat. What comes out of Shabbat? I can say all the holidays come out of Shabbat, right? In a sense, they're Shabbat, as we discussed not that long ago. And I can say, for that matter, that Shemitah is an extension of Shabbat. But by the way, if we go back and say Shabbat is so important, I think we have an easier time with that, because Shabbat talks about creation. Shemitah also does. It's called here Shabbat LaHashem. This is my land. I created it. I want a Shabbat. I mean, there's an interesting mathematical computation that if you count all of the holidays over 6 years, right? If you take in every single year, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, first day, last day, you count all of the biblical holidays over a 6 year period, you'll find out that it adds up to exactly 1 year. Together with the Shabbatot, it adds up to 1 year. You have 52 Shabbatot times six, and then you have all the holidays, and you times that by six, it comes out to exactly 365. And or 355, I don't remember which one. And it ends up exactly, and then I don't remember which one. What? One day. I said biblical. All the biblical holidays, and then the computation implied as follows: the truth is that the land should also rest on Shabbat, right? Shabbat is Shabbat. The land can't rest on Shabbat. You plant something on Friday, it's still going to grow, and you're allowed to plant something on Friday. But just like man needs Shabbat, and God gives us Shabbat, the land needs Shabbat. The land doesn't get Shabbat, so therefore, if you say, no, how long does it take to get to a full year? It takes 6 years in order to get to full years of Shabbatot and Chagim, and therefore you have the seventh year. As I said, if you want me to work out the exact computation, we can do it, but that can be your homework if you want. Why do you keep trying to figure out what would be... Yeah, go ahead. Tie back with one.
The fact that the land was cursed in Gan Eden after that.
Could be.
So everything's got to get...
It could be, but we're not going to talk about that either. Okay, let's continue. If you want, I can switch the topic anytime you want. I see. You find this particularly boring.
No.
Are you doing the math for me over here?
We'll do it later.
We'll do it later. I've done it. It works. I just have to reconstruct it. Okay. By 354. Anyway, let's continue. Most likely, as I said, Rashi is going forward, comparing this with what happens in the plains of Moab. If we go back to Mishpatim, though, and again, in a certain sense, Mishpatim is the extension of the Aseret HaDibrot, when I look at Shemitah, and as how it's discussed in Mishpatim, again, here it's much broader than Aseret HaDibrot, I find the following, source 3. V'sheish shanim tizra et artzecha, v'asavta tvo'ata. Vashvi'it tishmetena unitashta ba'achu evyone amecha yitrom tachuchayat asada kentaseh lechamerchal izetecha. And from there it goes into sheshet yimim taseh ma'asecho v'yom ha'shvi'it tishbot. Right, it goes from 6 years you work, seventh year you're off, 6 days you work, seventh day you're off. And by the way, the verse that immediately follows that goes really into the Shalosh Regalim, which is, if you want to see it, it's in source 13. It goes into the Shalosh Regalim, which really makes a very nice extension. Parsha Mishpatim could be seen as an extension of the Aseret HaDibrot. Shabbat turns into more details about Shabbat, it turns into the Chagim, and it turns into Shemitah. But if you've noticed over here in Mishpatim, before we get to what's not here, all of Shemitah is explained over here in two verses. If you compare that with this week's parsha, you'll find that Shemitah over here is explained with far more detail. So now, if I go back and I say that Mishpatim is what is said on Har Sinai, Mishpatim is what's said at Har Sinai, and it's said there, apparently, with less detail than said in Parshat Bahar, what then does Parshat Bahar reveal to me? Parshat Bahar then teaches me, no, don't assume that what was said in Mishpatim was the whole thing which was said over there. That's simply what was told to be written at that point. But the reality is that it was given in far more detail as evidenced what's written in Parshat Bahar. So if that's the case, then Parshat Bahar is telling us, I mean, if you want to go back to the Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh, it's telling us that there's far more details, and it sounds, although this may not be the case, it sounds like what we would normally call Torah Shebal Peh was included as well, as said to Moshe by God at Sinai, and even though sometimes we find very brief verses or very terse explanations, that reality is they were given much more, and therefore, again, Shemitah, without going into detail again, why Shemitah? Shemitah becomes the archetype of the prototype, where we see a brief description, a long description, just like that, all the mitzvot were given with headlines and with full-length articles. That seems to be what this Sifra is saying. Now, if in reality everything was really taught, both headlines and great detail, then we shouldn't find what we find at the very end of last week's parsha. And just in case you don't like this question and you find it chutzpedik, it's not my question, it's the Maharal's. So blame the Maharal. Afterwards, you'll decide if you like his answer as much as his question. Source number 6 tells us, Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelit v'hu ben Ish Mitzri b'toch b'nei Yisrael. You remember the story, they get into an altercation. V'yikov ben Isha Yisraelit et Hashem, curses. V'yikalel v'yaviu oto el Moshe v'shimi Moshlomit b'divri l'mateh dan. V'nichu b'mishbar l'frosh lahem al pi Hashem. They put him in a holding cell in order for it to be explained to them what to do. And afterwards, Vaydavar Hashem Moshe Lemor, Hotziat Makala Michutz Machane, the Samchu Koshim Yedeim, or Shofagmu, Otokoleda. Afterwards, we're told that he should be stoned. Now, did you notice between the end of verse 12 and the beginning of verse 13, we have a little bit of a space that we're waiting? Why are we waiting? Because the man is in prison. Why is he in prison? Because Moshe doesn't know what to do. Now, why does Moshe not know what to do? So let's look at the way the Maharal asks the question, source 7. First of all, the Maharal is starting off with a side question, which for him is quite significant. I don't find it as interesting as the main issue that he brings up, but part of what he's bothered with is in terms of Jewish law, you can't give a death penalty unless a person was warned, unless they had hatra'ah. Now, if there is no isur known at that point, no one could have given him hatra'ah. You can't warn someone if no one knows what the prohibition is. That's what the Maharal is dealing with, which is a very legalistic problem. What's interesting to me is the larger issue, which I think you now already understand. Let's start from the very beginning before it's underlined. The Im Tomo Makalel Zek Heven Shelo Yadu Bo Shehu B'Mita, regarding the Makalel, in source 7, that if they didn't know that he gets a death penalty, then came Lo Hilo Hatra'ad. If that's the case, they could not have warned him. The Ein Mitot Beitin Belo Hatra'ah. And we know, according to tradition, that you cannot give anybody a penalty, certainly not a death penalty, without proper warning. The Chen Mekoshesh, Shelo Yodin Be'ezem Ita, Yamitu Oto. Same thing regarding the Mekoshesh. How could they have possibly given him a death penalty if he was not properly warned? Now, of course, you can answer this very simply. How can you answer? God said, kill him. That's it. So this whole principle, you need Hatra'ah, that goes by an earthly Beitin, but goes by certain rules. If God is in the desert telling you, kill this person, then you don't have to worry about procedural issues in law. Even Alan Dershowitz can't help such a person. It doesn't make a difference if the glove fits or not. Over here, God says, kill him, no technicalities. That's I think, is the simplest answer. But the Maharal again, is bothered by this legalistic point. I'm skipping a little bit within the Maharal, but the next line where it's underlined. The Tema, and then he says, but the truth is it's a wonder. The truth is we know that the whole Torah was given at Sinai, klalim, principles, pratim, details, the diktukim. He adds one more thing. Diktuk is even, you know,
particulars.
Thank you. Im kain lama lo yada Moshe Rabbeinu olav shalom din sheyadun oto. If that's the case, why doesn't Moshe know this? Which means, now, by the way, one of the beautiful things about both the Mekoshesh and the Mekalel, we don't know when it is. Neither of those stories, you know exactly when it is, but let's assume anyway that it's after Matan Torah, which is most likely a fair statement, and that's what he's assuming in the question. He goes, if Moshe received everything, then why doesn't Moshe know this? Again, wasn't that the Rashi, that everything was Misinai? Kalim and Pratim were Misinai, so then why doesn't Moshe know? So again, this is the Maharal taking a biblical story where Moshe doesn't know, which is again not the only time Moshe doesn't know something, and he's questioning why does Moshe not know this if Moshe really did receive everything? You'll explain to me his answer. The Yirulomar, it seems to me, Afagav shenatan klaloteha uprateha v'diktukeha, davar zenat nala ayidei shahaya yochol umod behekesh omi binyan av, omi drasha ma. He says that Moshe, he was given all these things, but this he should have figured out by a rule of logic. There should have been, by the way, that creates a whole other problem, which I'm not saying is an insurmountable problem, but generally we say when it comes to punishments, you don't give punishments based upon issues of logic. It also depends which kind of issues of logic. Over here he's saying that Moshe could have known this, because again, what he's telling you is an issue in terms of case law. In terms of case law, you have principles, and then you make applications of those principles, and Moshe should have been able to make an application. Moshe was not sure which case this fits into, which really, is this a satisfying answer or not? Or has he now redefined what it means when we say that we got Kalim and Pratim Misinai? Right, because you would have thought Kalim and Pratim meant everything. And now he's saying, yeah, it's everything, but it's everything in potential. And in potential,
theory.
What?
In theory.
Is this
the first time someone was put to death? Is this the first time, like,
possible.
Moshe decided,
possible.
Like, you know, I know the rules, but, like, I got to do this, like, make sure Hashem says it's okay.
I understand, but it's still saying is that it's don't think that just because Moshe got all the Torah, that Moshe knew all the Torah. And I know that it sounds very funny. What I mean by that is Moshe doesn't necessarily know the narrative of the stories that will take place. This is something which I've brought up at various times. Does Moshe, for example, when he gets the Torah, does he know that one day God's going to say to speak to the rock and Moshe's going to hit the rock and then he hits the rock? I mean, if he knows all that, it's all written already, then first of all, Moshe has no free will, and secondly, why would Moshe do it? Unless he has no free will, and he has no free will, why should he be punished for it? Of course, this whole thing could be avoided if we were to say that, and you want to go back to the oral Torah and the written Torah, Moshe receives the oral Torah at Sinai, in principle. He doesn't know all the narrative, certainly the things that haven't happened yet. And therefore, when stories come up, he has to make applications. And the applications, he's not always necessarily 100% sure. You could say that. It's just, first of all, it's not what the Maharal is saying. Secondly, it's not necessarily what the Torah is saying. Because then they're waiting to be told what to do. If he knows what to do, then why be waiting? Saying, wait for the go-ahead. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but it's a very drastic thing.
I accept it, but nonetheless, even after your observation, it still would seem to be that Moshe doesn't know the narratives that will unfold. What he knows is the principle of law, and therefore the hesitation before the implementation.
You know, there are few cases where other people get the credit for getting the law from God, so this might, I mean, that suggests that Moshe was not aware of every fine point. We have other cases.
Well, I'll... In order to avoid a larger problem right now, let me just point out and put this in your heads. Jews are supposed to believe, and right then you can argue with me what we're supposed to believe. Jews are supposed to believe in two things, Torah Misinai and Torah Min HaShemayim. Okay? Torah Misinai and Torah Min HaShemayim. Torah comes from Sinai and Torah comes from heaven. It's my opinion that when we say Torah Misinai, we're talking about the oral Torah. And when we say Torah from heaven, we're talking about the written Torah. And the written Torah was written at the end of the 40 years when they're ready at a distance from Sinai. The authority of every word that Moshe writes is God, but that's Torah Min HaShemayim. Which means, my point then is that Torah Min HaShemayim, Torah Mi Sinai are not necessarily the same thing. When we say in Pirkei Avot, Moshe Kibel Torah Mi Sinai U'masra LeYoshua, is that Torah Shebichtav or Torah Shebal Peh? And you see the word Misora there within that formulation, you get the suspicion we're talking about Torah Shebal Peh. So therefore, in the desert, as these things are unfolding, does Moshe have the five books of Moshe in his drawer that he keeps opening up for reference? Okay? So therefore, again, we just have to think this through a little bit. The narratives have not been written yet. The narratives have not happened yet. Moshe doesn't know the narrative yet, but Moshe knows the law. And that's really the point over here, is that what happens when you separate law and narrative, what are you left with? You're left with two different things. We have, on the one hand, Klalim and Pratim of law. We have, the other hand, narrative, which includes stories and real stories, where we have to make applications of those laws. Once you have to mix those two things together, Moshe hesitates. And what's the Maharal's point? Well, Moshe, does he know? Well, he could have known. Does he know Pratim and Klalim? Yes, he knows Klalim and Pratim. But does he know with complete confidence that these Klalim and Pratim apply to this case and therefore take this man out to be killed? And therefore you're correct. You're saying he's hesitating. Is this really the case where we take someone out to be killed? So when I say that Moshe doesn't know the narrative yet, should that come as such a big surprise to us? All that I'm asking for is a little more sophistication than normally people have. Normally, Moshe got the Torah Misinai, so Moshe's walking down with the five books of Moshe, right? That does not seem to be the case. And again, what I'm just saying is, realize these two terms are parallel terms, Torah Misinai and Torah Min HaShemayim. I can believe every single word of Torah Shebal Peh is Torah Min HaShemayim. I can believe that every single word of written Torah is every single word of oral Torah is Torah Misinai, and every single word of the written Torah is Torah Min HaShemayim. And these exist on parallel planes. And what we're seeing over here is that we have a collision of these parallel planes. And the Maharal solution is, yes, Moshe knows Torah Sheba'al Peh, Diktukim, and Pratim. He's just not, and he had the ability of making the application in this case. He just wasn't sure. Okay? And therefore, he could have done it, but he didn't do it. And therefore, we see over here this mixture of, as I said, narrative and law. And that seems to be what's taking place. Yeah? Oh no! You tell me who you love more, your mother or your father? Yeah.
What was the last line of the Maharal?
The last line that I read, or the last line in the Maharal?
The last line of that section.
Again, the last line that I read, or the last line?
No, the last line.
One second, I'm not seeing it. Fine, okay. So let's read that last paragraph. I'm going to read it. Again, this was the part I didn't understand in the Maharal.
Okay, because I don't understand it either.
Okay, good. So that's what I was referring to. I said, you can help explain this to me.
Okay.
Because I was okay when I read the first part. When I read this part over here, it just said...
Okay, then we don't have to discuss.
No, I'll explain to you. I'll try. V'imtom ahodu amarashi parashat shacharei zeh ma'in shmita etzel har sinai v'lakol mitzvot nemru b'har sinai. Again, we're said, not written. We're said in Sinai. Shema balomar shemitzvah shmita nemar b'har sinai mifurashot legamrei. Ve'ein ze kushya. It's not a question. De'yishul kach ein tzarech lechtov b'har Sinai. De'sof sof kulam nemro b'har Sinai. In the final analysis, everything was said b'Sinai. Hein mefurash o shelo mefurash. Be it explicitly or not explicitly, ein chiluk b'zeh, there's no difference in it. What he's saying is that when we say the Torah is given b'Sinai, he's saying it doesn't necessarily have to be spelled out at Sinai. It could be in its very raw sense. By the way, there's a midrash that says this. I didn't have to go to the Maharal for this. The reason I went to the Maharal is because the Maharal says it right over here regarding the verses that we're dealing with. The midrash that I could have brought in is in source number 9. Vayitain el Moshe. This is Moshe receiving the Luchot. By the way, the term is Vayitain Moshe kichalato l'daberit. Kichalato means when he completed. God gave him Luchot when he completed speaking with him. Vayitain el Moshe amar avo kol arba'im yom she'asa Moshe l'mala haya l'lami Torah v'shocheach. All 40 days that Moshe was there, he studied Torah and he forgot. Just in case you ever get frustrated in school, your children get frustrated in school, Moshe also forgot. He had a difficulty retaining the vast amount of information. Amar le ribono olam, yesh li arba'im yom ve'ein yodea davar. Been there 40 days, I don't know a thing. Masa kodesh baruch hu, mi shehishlim arba'im yom natan lo ha-kodesh baruch hu t'torah matana. Shenem mar v'yitena Moshe, v'yitena, it was a present. Okay, so that's the first thing. That's the first point of the Midrash. Moshe really is not getting it, but God gives it to him as a present. Okay, point number one. But what's the problem? The problem is the Torah is so vast, how can you learn so much in 40 days? So the first solution is, okay, he gave it to him. Continue, because that's not the only solution. And then it continues and it says, V'chi kol ha-Torah lamad Moshe? Did Moshe really learn the entire Torah? Tivba Torah, which is great because it quotes a verse in Eov, because there are certain sources in the Gemara even that says that Moshe received Torah and Navi and Ketuvim and Mishnah and Gemara and anything that would ever be taught Moshe got at Sinai. And I can assure you right now there are many good Jews who believe that literally, and if you argue with them on that, they will say terrible things about you and won't drink wine that you touch. Over here, the Midrash asks, and can Moshe really have received the entire Torah? Because it says in the Torah, which I said is great because this is the broadest definition of Torah, including books like Eov, Aruka mi eretz mida, v'rachava mineyam. It's broader than land, deeper than the sea. Ula arbeim yom lamda Moshe. And did Moshe really learn all of this in a mere 40 days? Ela klalim lamdu HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. Moshe only learned principles. Have, that's what it means, kichalato ledaber ito. Instead of kichalato when he finished, rather kichalato, he spoke in principles. That Moshe got klalim, klalim, and not pratim, pratim. Okay, so 1 second. Now, doesn't this sound a lot like what the Maharal was saying? Now, but the Maharal didn't want to quote this. Again, of course, the Maharal knew this. Of course, the Maharal could have quoted this. The Maharal tries to say that he got Kalim Pratim. But how did he get Pratim? Bichlal. Right? He said he should have been able to figure it out. Why? Again, logically. Which means, if you could have figured it out logically, does that mean that you received it in principle or you received it in detail? Which means, he understands, the Maharal seems to be saying, that Moshe receives the Torah in generalities and details, but what gives him the details? One wonderful thing that humans have. What's that?
A mind.
People quote Rabbi Soloveitchik that sometimes they would ask him after class, where do you get that from? What's your source? So he said, a clear, logical mind. Right? People want to see a book that somebody said it before you. It's as if only if somebody dead said something before you, then it's of any significance. But what the Maharal seems to be saying over here, again, you can go back and read this Maharal, certainly the paragraph that we understood, but I think that's what he means afterwards as well, that we say that he received kalim and pratim. He's saying there's not a problem here, because pratim emerged not that God gave Moshe a micro lesson on every single detail. And that's the whole thrust of this midrash. That's very difficult to retain. But rather, Moshe receives the klalim, and then he sees the pratim, but the pratim he receives by virtue of being able to use his mind and make applications of the klalim, and that's what it means to receive the pratim. Which, by the way, is very different than what we would have understood when we read Rashi by itself the first time. Right? And what's interesting is, again, the Maharal sees himself, in the Gur Aryeh, as explaining Rashi. I don't think he's explaining Rashi here. I think he's explaining the Maharal, but I don't think he's explaining Rashi, because I think when you end up with his explanation, it's really not the same thing of Rashi saying, and his explanation is much closer to this Midrash that I just now showed you. Yes?
I have a lot of trouble with this. I'm trying to be focused on this, and I'm reconciling the Midrash with the Midrash. Everything you're saying about Moshe Rabbeinu doing this intellectually goes connected the Midrash that we have about Avraham Avinu, who does exactly the opposite. Avraham Avinu intuitively understands Kol HaTorah.
Right.
And came to it only through intellect, has no divine revelation,
right,
and was able to observe all the mitzvot. Mm-hmm. Now you're saying Moshe Rabbeinu is doing exactly the opposite.
Why is it the opposite?
It's not exactly the opposite. You're saying that.
I'm saying Moshe receives.
He had to receive the mitzvot, the Torah, the concepts, and then he had to learn to apply the concepts. Avraham Avinu intuitively knows the concepts and doesn't have to apply them.
But still, the difference is one of authority. Law becomes.
I know.
Look, but by the way, there are other midrashim I could have, which are more direct. I already said the Gemara says Moshe received everything in detail, including Gemara, including Mishnah, and so on. That's much more of a direct contradiction, or it sounds like a direct contradiction. What the Maharal is doing, by the way, there's a place in the Rambam, because I didn't think I was going to get into this, I was going to get stuck on this point so much. There's a place in the Rambam as well that he seems to go in the same direction. That Torah Sheba Al Peh is something which is received, but in its broader sense, and then there is this human element to it. As I said, there are many good Jews who would tend not to take this kind of approach and be more inclined to say no. Moshe is somebody who heard every single detail. But by the way, there are two students of the Maharal, and I once heard somebody give a shiur on this, and he claimed that two students of the Maharal said it, the Maharal must have said it as well. You can be the judge of that based on what you just now saw, where they say that, one is the Tiferet Yisrael, and I forgot right now the other one, not the Tiferet Yisrael, the Tosfot Yom Tov. I think a second, I'll get the other one. Would they say that there was distinction between what Moshe received logically versus what Moshe received prophetically? And Moshe only taught over Torah that he received logically. Whatever he saw prophetically, which means if you were to go, and again, I really don't mean to be facetious now, but it's important for us to understand sometimes that there are doctrinal differences. I do believe if you asked your average Hasidic kid, and I don't care right now if it's a Gera Chassid, a Belzu Chassid, a Satmar Chassid, and say to them, did Moshe Rabbeinu understand how microwave ovens work? I think they would say yes. I think that that's the way that they've been taught, is to say, yes, of course Moshe did it, because how is it possible that Moshe didn't know that? How can you possibly say that Moshe did? And Moshe knew everything. Moshe received everything. On the other hand, you just now read that Moshe received the principles, and therefore, if you were to explain, in terms of the thermodynamics and electricity, what it was, and Moshe, once he understood that, then would he have had the ability of saying, okay, therefore, cooking in a microwave is a klirishon, klisheni, or whatever you want to say? Of course Moshe could have been, because he knew the principles. But how much he knew is what you can argue. What the Tosfot Yom Tov says is that that he saw prophetically certain things, that he could have seen microwaves and refrigerators and cars and planes, but that he saw as a vision and had no ability of articulating and passing it on for future generations. So then you're stuck with then you're left with something in the middle, where on the one hand Moshe possesses all knowledge, but there's a distinction even within his knowledge of what he has intellectually versus what he has prophetically. Over here, that doesn't seem to be what the Maharal is saying. What the Maharal seems to be saying is that Moshe has future cases, but only in principle, and he still has to use his intellect to make those applications. That sounds to be what the Maharal is saying here.
The two cases that the Maharal gives, the Mikalel and the Koshesh, seemed to me that the reason he's hesitating is it's not clear whether it's Rabbi or Deen. Whereas Shemitah is very detailed because it's, I mean, it doesn't involve any
right.
sort of moral decisions. Is there a way to separate out the ones that are...
Your question is an important question, but I still want to utilize what the Maharal said over here, and not move away from that point. He makes a more general statement. Yes, he's concerned with a side point. His side point is, how could they ever have been killed? They didn't have hatra'ah. So no, they could have had hatra'ah. They could have been warned. Again, he's dealing with a much more legalistic issue, but what he ends up saying over here is what I think is so instructive. Let me move on. Let me move on a little bit so that we get at least towards where I want to get to. I think that there's another issue over here in terms of this relationship between the klal and the prat, between mishpatim and what we later on find. There's actually two teachings of the Meshech Chachma, one of which I think I mentioned here once briefly, the other one I'm quite confident I never mentioned, where he says something which is far more radical. The truth is, he's not the first one saying it. As far as he's concerned, in the one of the cases, we'll see, don't worry, no, I won't leave everything up in the air. In one of the cases, he is explaining something that he has on tradition from the Gra, which in reality isn't the Gra, it's long before the Gra, but the case itself gives us a completely different understanding of this klal and prat. So let's see what the Gra says. The Gra is dealing with a different problem. I am in number 10. If, by the way, this is indeed the Gra, there's a whole question, some. Regarding what the Gra said, what he didn't say after. The Vilna Gaon never wrote anything after he was 40 years old. He himself didn't write. And after he died, many people claimed to have notes and manuscripts and things that they took from classes, things they heard from him, and so on. There was even a whole Beit Din that was convened that had to sit and judge what's authentic Torah from the Vilna Gaon and what's not authentic. Okay, that Beit Din has not convened in a long time, and the Vilna Gaon keeps writing new things. Every now and again, you find a new book. Every year, you find new books from the Vilna Gaon. Over here, he's dealing with the mitzvah of Sukkot. And he's dealing with a very well-known question. The question is, why do we celebrate Sukkot in the fall? Right? Sukkot should be in the spring. Especially when it says, source number 10, he's quoting the pasuk from last week's parasha, last week. Yes, Laman Yedu Dorotechem, Ki B'Sukkot Hoshafti Et Bnei Yisrael B'Hotzi Otam Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Right? The generation should know that when I took them out of Egypt, I took them out in Sukkot. Yes, there's an argument in the Gemara and in the Midrash, source 14, if you want to see it. Ki B'Sukkot Hoshafti Bnei Yisrael Anane Kavud Hayu Diri Velezer B'Kiva Omer Sukkot Mamash Asulahem. You'll find that the positions reversed in the Sifra, where Rabbi Akiva says, Ananei Kavod, okay, who said what? I don't know. You'll find later authorities to say it was really both, Ananei Kavod and Sukkah Mamash. Either way, on that verse where it says that we were taken out in Sukkot, Sukkot should commemorate Yitziat Mitzrayim. So if Sukkot commemorates Yitziat Mitzrayim, when is Yitziat Mitzrayim? In the spring. So therefore, it should be in the spring. Now, what's the famous answer that everybody knows? The famous answer, if you want to see it inside, it's in source number 12. I just have the Sefer Toda'ah, which quotes it. You don't have to bother looking inside, where he tells us that it would have been too pleasant to sit outside. As I said, we've discussed this before. So look at source 10, where it's underlined. Hinei rabim makshim, lama anachna osim sukkot b'tishrei, keivan shehu neged hekef ananei kavod, hayir u'i lasoto b'nisan, ki b'nisan hayat chilat hekef ananim. That if Sukkah is for Ananeya Kavod, the Ananeya Kavod begins when? In the spring. So therefore, the Sukkah should be in the spring. Amnam Yeshlomer, Lefiyashe Kesha'asu Et Ha'Egel, Nistalku Ha'Ananim. But when the Jews made the Egel, then the Ananim disappeared. Va'az Lo Chazru Ad Shehitchilu La'asot HaMishkan. And when did the Ananim come back? When they started to make the Mishkan. Umoshe Yarad B'Yom HaKippurim, Moshe came down with the Luchot Shniot on Yom Kippur. Umimachrat Yom HaKippurim Vayikam Moshe V'tivah Melechet HaMishkan. The following day, Moshe gathered the people and instructed them about building the Mishkan. V'zeh haya b'yud alef b'tishrei. V'chtiv, and what does it say? V'am hibiu od nidava b'boker b'boker. Od shnei yamim, haray yud gimel v'yud dalet. V'tishrei natlu kol chacham leiv v'moshe et zahav v'minyanu v'mishkal. U'v'chamisha asar hitchilu la'asot. V'az chazru ha'anonei ha'kavod. U'lekach anu osim sukot b'tetvav b'tishrei. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. It is a wonderful explanation. It's brilliant. What does he say exactly? That when we talk about Sukkot because of the Anane HaKavod, it is not the Anane HaKavod, which is original. It's the original Anane HaKavod dissipated with the Chet HaEgel. When Moshe comes down with the second Luchot, and they start collecting the material. So he tells them on Yud Aleph, they collect Yud Bet and Yud Gimel. They weigh it, Yud Dalet, Tet Vav, they start to build. When they start to build the Mishkan, at that point the Ananim come back. Which what he's doing now right now is he's also telling you there's a direct connection between the Anane HaKavod of Matan Torah and the Anane HaKavod of Sukkot, with one stop in the middle. What's the stop in the middle? The stop in the middle is also Yom Kippur. Now, if you were to ask me, once we have this information, the fact that we read in Parshat Acharei Mot, how does Aaron go into Acharei Mot Shnei B'nei Aaron, right? B'zot Yavo Aaron El HaKodesh. How does he go in? Do you remember what I'm talking about? And it uses the word cloud within that context. Look at source 17. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe acharei mot shnei bnei Aaron bikravatam lifnei Hashem vayamitu. Vayomar Hashem el Moshe daber al Aaron achich va'al yavo b'chol et lekodesh mibayit leparochet al pnei hakaporet asher al Aaron v'lo yamut ki ba'anan eira'e al hakaporet v'natan haktoret al ha'esh lifnei Hashem v'kisa anan haktoret, which means within the service of Yom Kippur. Now let's keep something in mind. This service of Yom Kippur, did they do it the first year in the desert? Did they do this the first year in the desert? How many reasons can you give me why they didn't? What? There was no Yom Kippur. It's still troubling you. There was no Yom Kippur at this point. There was no Mishkan at this point. There was no Kohen Gadol at this point. What is there? Nothing. Not even a cloud. There's nothing. But what happens because of Yom Kippur? Forgiveness, and therefore the Ananim will come back. Which now you realize that if you keep, what am I saying to you? Keep your eye on the cloud, right? The cloud is the main thing over here. Keep your eye on the Anan. Where do we find the Anan? We find the Anan when they leave Egypt. Where do we find the Anan? Har Sinai is described as, right? You want the Anan by Sinai. Source. Oh, it doesn't say your source. Sorry. After source 21, I guess we ran out of sources there. Shemot Perik Yotet. Vayinu kol ha'am v'yachta v'yamu kol ha'shet divar Hashem naseh. V'yashav Moshe et divrei ha'am el Hashem. Top of the negative page 6. V'yomar Hashem Moshe hinei no chiba ilecha ba'av ha'anan. V'avu yishma ha'am b'dabri imach. That God will reveal himself in an anan. Later on in Perik Kaf Dalet, which is the next source, Vayal Moshe el Ahar v'yichas anan et Ahar, which means Matan Torah is all included in this theme of the Anan. When we now find an Anan by the service of Yom Kippur, that should then be telling you that there's some kind of a connection between Yom Kippur and between Har Sinai. And we all know the answer why there's a connection. What's the connection? There's a historical connection. What is it? The Luchot. The first Luchot and the second Luchot, and the Anan is in both places. But now we learn that when the Jews left Egypt, there was an Anan surrounding them. It's there by Matan Torah takes place with an Anan. The eagle comes, the Anan disappears. Yom Kippur comes, the Jews are forgiven. When does the Anan come back? On Sukkot. And now we're told on the following year, on Yom Kippur, V'zot yavo aron el hakodesh, ba'anan, come inside with ananan, come inside with anan, which is made by the ketoret, and that's what's going to every year bring forgiveness. But again, the symbol is the anan, and then we're told that the Kohen Gadol does that in Yom Kippur, but when it comes to Sukkot, every single person should become enveloped within the anan. All of that, I'm saying, based upon that, those few lines of the Vilna Gaon. Now, right? Because the Vilna Gaon points out, why is Sukkot in the fall? Because we're not commemorating the original Anane HaKavod, we're commemorating the return of the Anane HaKavod. That's what the Vilna Gaon said. Now, the reality is that somebody beat the Vilna Gaon to this by over 500 years, and I'm quite sure that he was quoting this when he taught it, because it's virtually word for word, and it's found in one of the drashot of a student of the Rajba and the Ritva, again, somebody who lived in the 12th century, 13th century, source 11, drashot Ri Ibn Shuhab, drashot Liyom Rishon Sukkot, source number 11. Again, you can judge how similar this is. Ubinyana Sukkah, Eini Tzarich La'arich Ki Shevach Lakel La'kol Yodim HaHalachot, So he just gets from the 14th to the 15th slightly differently, but as you see, it's just about word for word what's quoted in the name of the Vilna Gaon. I'm just pointing at it at least a good 500 years before the Vilna Gaon. But the point remains the same. But I want to, again, think this through a little bit and now see the comment of the Meshech Chachma. In Sefer Shmot, remember, we went from Yitro, which has Shabbat. We went to Parshat Mishpatim that had Shemitah, but I told you it also had another extension of Shabbat. What's the other extension? Look at source 13. Shalosh regalim techogli bashana. Et chag ha-matzot tishmor shivat yamim, tuch ha-matzot kasher tziviticha lemo'ed chodesh aviv ki yatzata mimitzrayim v'lo yiru panai rekam. Three holidays a year. First one is Chag HaMatzot. What is it called? It's called Chag HaMatzot. We're then told 7 days to get matzah. We're told one of the mitzvot next to Chag HaMatzot. And what else are we told? Chodesh Aviv. And then we're told something historical because the Jews were taken out of Egypt. Pasuk Tet Zayin. V'chag HaKatzir bikurei ma'asecha asher tizra b'sadeh v'chag HaAsif b'tzeit ha'shana b'asfacha et ma'asecha min ha'sadeh. Chag HaShavuot is called here Chag HaChatzir, and Chag HaSukkot is called here Chag HaAsif. No historical information is mentioned about either one of them. Just silent. All you have regarding two of the holidays is agricultural issues. The third one is a historical issue. The Meshech Chachma, which you'll find in source 16, by the way, in source 15, which I'm skipping, we'll read it later, Rav Menashe Klein, very nice Hungarian posek from Brooklyn, tells us because the women didn't sin in the Chet HaEgel, that's why they don't have to sit in a sukkah. He took all the same logic that I already just now told you, and he says, that's why women don't have to sit, because they didn't have a sin with the Chet HaEgel. They never lost the Ananei HaKavod, but he doesn't quite say that, but as far as apologetics goes, it's very good. You'll read that yourselves. Look at source 16 now. The Meshech Chachma. V'chag HaAsif. V'chein b'chitisa. It's also called Chag HaAsif. Lokein b'dvarim. But if you look in Dvarim, what is it called? K'tiv Chag HaSukkot. So what's the shift between Chag HaAsif, agricultural, versus Chag HaSukkot, which is historical? Hatama pi divrei hagra, שכשניתן לוחות השניים, המושי ירד בנהר וחזרו עני הכבוד בתפרד וחודש תשרי, נצטבו הסוכות כידוע. ולכן אז קודם דברות שניות נקרא חג האסיף ולא חג הסוכות. It wasn't חג הסוכות yet. Why not? It hadn't happened. But by the way, let's go back now to our club.
No. I get it. I know what you're saying, but I'm just...
Yeah. By the way, the Gra and all of these other commentaries are focusing on Anei HaKavod. Okay. They're not focusing on Sukkot Mamash. They're focusing on Anei HaKavod. And what's amazing about this Meshech Chachma, what's he telling you? You talk about the Kalim and the Pratim, and I can say, hold it. Did Moshe already get at that point the Kalim and the Pratim of Chag HaSukkot? What's he saying? He's saying no, because it doesn't exist yet. Why doesn't it exist yet? Because there is no Chag HaSukkot yet. Had there not been a Chet HaEgel, there would not have been a Chag HaSukkot. What would there have been? Chag HaAsif, it would not have been Chag HaSukkot. It would not have been necessary to commemorate the return of the Anei HaKavod. It just wouldn't have been. But by the way, you all remember that we had three things, three presents in the Midbar, right? The Man and the Be'er and the Anei HaKavod. Who was the Anei HaKavod for? Who's Chut? There's the one out of three chance. There is a midrash about Avram. Leave me alone with Avram. Aaron. I'm sorry. I thought you knew that midrash. Fine. Good. Because it says when he brings the chaman, whatever, by the visitation there. It's Aaron. Why is it Aaron? Yeah. It meaning, even when you think about the Anei HaKavod and Aaron, which... Again, I'm saying, but that's exactly the point. Is that he's the one who does the Egel, but he's the one afterwards becomes the Kohen Gadol, and he's the one who brings the Ketoret, and that brings back the Anei HaKavod. The Anei HaKavod is Bezchut Aaron, but it's only something which we now understand that Aaron's association with it, which seems to be, you know, completely, you know, disconnected, is only when you look at it, as far as I can tell, is only when you look at it post Chet HaEgel. So here the Meshech Chachma is just giving us a completely different understanding of what we thought we understood from Rashi initially. What do we think we understood from Rashi? That originally Moshe receives everything, and when you look at this law of Shemitah, you now realize that everything was given in details. And now we're told, excuse me, you can't have received details that didn't exist yet. Theories, yes. Klalim, yes. But there are certain details that just didn't exist, by the way. There's one more thing I'll say for the Meshech Chachma, and then you'll remind me about the by the way. Okay, you remind me? I'll forget the whole thing won't work. The Meshech Chachma says the same thing, more or less, but with a great moral point. You know what? Let me do the by the way first, and then I'll come back to this last Meshech Chachma. We'll finish with that. By the way, if you look at Shemitah in this week's Parsha, there's actually two elements of Shemitah, one of which isn't at all in Parsha Mishpatim. What's that? Yovel. When is Yovel commemorated? On Yom Kippur. Go back and look in Parshat Mishpatim. What will you find? Shabbat. Three holidays. Shemitah. No Rosh Hashanah mentioned. No Yom Kippur mentioned. No Yovel mentioned. Yovel, a major part of Yovel, is that it happens on Yom Kippur. But if you have no Yom Kippur, then how can you talk about Yovel? So it's not just that Shemitah is in more depth over here. There are elements of Shemitah, namely Yovel, that aren't even in existence as of yet, if we're right understanding, or elements about it, namely Yom Kippur, which don't exist because there's no Chet HaEgel yet, there's no Chet HaEgel, there's no need for Yom Kippur. You can't speak about Yovel being practiced on Yom Kippur when there is no Yom Kippur because there's no Chet HaEgel.
Why is there no Rosh Hashanah?
I don't know, and you asked me that last time I said this. Right? Right? Now I'll say the other Meshech Chachma, where he says the same thing about something else. Right, you did ask me last time, right? Look at source 23. It's good we had some sources here in the end. Source 23 is in Parshat Mishpatim. Ki tifka shur oivecha o chamaro to'eh hashev tashivenu lo. The mitzvah of Hashavet Aveda. What does it say about Hashavet Aveda? If you bump into an animal, a shor, a chamor, of your enemy, please return the animal. What does it mean of your enemy? Even your enemy. Even your enemy has a right to for you to return the animal to them. In source 24, in Sefer Devarim, it has the same law. Lo tir'e et chamor achicha o shoro noflim b'derech v'ta'lamta mehem hakem tapinimo. Okay, it's not identical, but over here it calls it your brother. So the Meshech Chacham wants to know, why is it over there Oivech and over here Achicha? So what does he write? Lo tisach amor Achicha uvimishpatim k'tiv Oivecha. Source 22. Mishum de ba'arvi psachim amar mishar lesnuye ha'k'tiv lo tisnat Achicha bevavecha umilki barabo sha'ovar avera v'zeh ha'yakodim ha'egel asher ha'yukulam amlechet goy kadosh. That in Mishpatim is before the Chet Egel, all the Jews are still holy. So if there's somebody who's Sonecha, and why is he Sonecha? Because he's wicked. Why is he wicked? Because he is very different from the rest of the community in a demonstrative way. Regarding that person, by the way, you realize what he's saying. That when the Jews still lived in a shtetl and everybody was Shomer Shabbat, and you had one person that was different, that person should be treated in a negative way. But if you live in an open society and you're no longer living where everybody are a big tzaddikim and people are influenced by all kinds of things, let's continue before we complete my putting words in his mouth. Az hayashari lesnuye, when he had one person who moved away from this whole mamlechet kohanim and goy kadosh, that person you would be allowed to hate. Imra obo avira, if you saw that person sin. Lo kein achre kol hamasot asher nichshelu ba'avanot. But after all the things that Jews have been through, and he's talking about in the desert 40 years later, all the things that they've been through. Im yirei adam b'chavei rochesh, im yifashpesh b'masav, yim tzeh kama michshulim. If a person will look at himself, he'll find himself all kinds of failures, upik pukim, and all kinds of questionable deeds. Zeh b'prad zeh v'zeh b'prad zeh. L'chein asur l'sno ish kezeh. Rach mishu ba'atzmo sarmi rav etzadik tamim b'derchav. What he's saying is, don't be so quick to hate other people, which is fascinating, because the Meshech Chachas was doing the exact same thing that he did by Sukkot. Again, there was an implication regarding Yom Kippur and regarding the Anonei Kavod. What he's doing over here is he's saying that before Matan Torah, we can say, if you find somebody who's despicable, you should still help him, but you're allowed to hate him. You're allowed to hate that person. Afterwards, by the time you get to Dvarim, he goes, don't even think the person's despicable. Look how much the Jews have been through, as I said. When you think about the Meshech Chachma, if I'm not mistaken, died in 1924. He lived in Dvinsk. And he saw Judaism moving from a time where everybody was religious to an open society. And again, you have certain religious people who would feel, oh, he's not religious, and therefore I should hate this individual. They deserve to be, you know, chastised or something, or so what. What's he saying? He's saying, look, you want to look inside yourself and see if there is anything which is questionable? And he says, that's really the difference between Mishpatim, between Vayikra, and between Dvarim, which means this point about a shift taking place between before the Egel and after the Egel, as I said, the Meshech Chachma says this in more than one case. What all of this does with Rashi, what we understood from Rashi initially, as saying, no, actually everything was given to Sinai, so let's go back then to the Maharal. Because now you see why the Maharal's position is so strong. Maharal's saying, yes, everything's received in terms of principle, but still the most important component of that, or if not the most important, a critical component is the human mind, the human intellect, and that is part of the process of giving Torah, that's part of Moshe Kibbel Torah Misinai, is that not only does he get all kinds of principles, that he also has his mind, and he's told, now make applications, and that is what the Maharal tells us is the diktukim, and that's what he's told is the details, but the details emerges after he uses his mind in order to be able to understand it. Okay, ladies, have a good time.